I would never, for all the money in the world, do a 1, 2, 3 bow shoot at once again. Like, I've seen them go south with bows, with guns, with everything. Like, it's just an...
never goes right.
No, and there's just, like, that weird kind of added element of pressure to, like, shoot at the same time or make sure it's going to work together. It's like, you can't just focus on the actual task at hand, right?
How many deer get wounded because people guess wrong ranges and... you know,
yeah,
that's the number one reason for missing, is not knowing the exact range of an animal.
Like, I had an arrow kind of knocked as I was crawling across the ground, but his head comes up, he starts sniffing, and then he starts coming. And as fast as I could draw back and punch the trigger as hard as I've ever punched it in my life, I buried that arrow into the bear's chest, and I hit him at like 9 yards as he was coming full swing.
Yeah, usually if a frontal shot is not successful, it's because you get shitty penetration. But you know, if you transected them, you know, it's kind of like, yeah, like you hit everything. Hey guys, before we get into this next episode, I want to share a couple things with you. First, I am happy to announce the new daysinthewild.com is finally launched. Everything is in one place: my guide services, the podcasts, access to my blogs, etc. So go check it out, daysinthewild.com. If you've been following the show lately, you know that we've partnered with Bushnell and Primos. The awesome thing about that is that if you use promo code STL02, you will save 15% on anything they sell. It doesn't have to be the stuff that I use. I've been using the Bushnell trail cameras for years. I did a couple of reviews over the years, and Bushnell always came out on top. They're excellent. And I know you've heard me talk about Primos calls and how good they are, but I've also been using their ground blinds, and they're awesome. I don't know if you remember Double Bull blinds, but that's a Primos product now, or has been for a while. I also tried out a set of their shooting sticks, and for standing shots, or, you know, using for clients when we're predator hunting, or my kids that need it when we're spot and stalk and have to get in close on javelina or anything like that. It's like a really good tool. I love them. They're quick setup and they're steady. Lastly, do yourself a favor and go check out the lineup of shooting bags, glassing pads, and other accessories that Phoenix Shooting Bags puts out. Go to phoenixshootingbags.com, use promo code John Stallone, all one word, and save 20%. Rifle season is upon us, guys. You'll thank me later, I promise. Go check them out. Hey, don't forget to give us a review on iTunes or wherever you're listening. It helps me keep bringing you guys content for free. It definitely helps out our ratings and reach more people. So thanks again for taking care of that. Appreciate it. Now let's roll into this next episode. Hi, welcome to Days in the Wild Big Game Hunting Podcast, brought to you by Phoenix Shooting Bags. Today, we're going to talk to Nick Hearn. Did I say that right, Nick? I know.
Trehearn.
What's close that? Enough. What is it?
Trehearn, but close enough.
Trehearn.
Yeah.
Ah, okay.
No one ever gets it right.
I had a feeling it would, I thought it was going to be like the silent thing, but
yeah,
guess not. Well, Nick, and in all honesty, usually when I have guys on the podcast, I know quite a bit about them. Other than you being on the same pro staff as me on Sneak Tech and seeing, you know, that you're a pretty accomplished photographer and whatnot, and I really don't know a whole lot about you. So usually when I ask this question for you to share about yourself, I kind of already know the answer, but give us a little rundown about yourself and let the listeners know who we're talking to.
Yeah. So my name's Nick Trehearn. I'm a full-time photographer in the hunting, fishing, outdoor space. And I've been doing that for the last 9 years, I guess. And yeah, pretty much got into that just for any excuse to be out hunting and fishing, which I've kind of revolved my life around for the last 22 years.
Nice. You're up in Canada, right?
Yeah. I live in Northern British Columbia.
Yeah. That's what I thought, in BC.
Yeah.
So lots of hunting opportunity up there.
Yeah, we're definitely pretty fortunate. I think we have like 18 big game species here that I could hunt almost all of them over the counter. So pretty lucky for sure.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's awesome. I actually just got off the phone with a buddy of mine. We had a podcast, catch up podcast. And he moved to Alaska 3 years ago or so. And you know, I hadn't really had a chance to really talk to him.
Yeah.
And, you know, he was telling me about all his adventures. So I'm gonna have two of you guys on here today, making me wish I was
somewhere else.
Yeah.
So, awesome.
So, I have you on today because I want to have you share, you know, a couple of your most interesting or maybe a story that has a teaching moment where you learn something about a species or just an outrageous hunt or your favorite hunt. So,
yeah, absolutely. I guess probably to kick it off, my favorite hunt also has a pretty good learning curve to it. So it was my first mule deer with the bow that grossed over 180. So that was hunting in southern Alberta, and I was hunting with a friend of mine, that childhood friend, and it was over-the-counter tags back then. So we had gone down for, I don't know, probably a week, I think. This was a decade ago, so it might be a little fuzzy, but yeah, and we were turning up good bucks every day, but like, it wasn't your typical area. Like, the reason we were getting on to the deer was, it's just, even though it was like prairie, badland type country, it was just too remote for where anyone would go. Like, we were hiking hours in the dark just to get to where we could see the deer hours more away, kind of thing.
Oh, geez.
To have a shot at them, like a full 18-hour day would give you one stalk, even though you see 200 deer just by the time it came to fruition. But it was kind of like right on that transition from velvet to hardhorn, and we spotted these two bucks. One was a big, gnarly, non-typical in velvet, and then one was the clean four-point I ended up arrowing. But so from the time we stalked them, like, it was, I don't know, a good couple miles across, including like a 300-yard wide river crossing. Like, it was just kind of the shot in the dark play if you'd ever seen one. But we ended up getting on top of these two bucks, both with our bows, at like 18 yards. These things are bedded right below us, side by side, both broadside. We were just like, this is in the bag. Like, how could it go wrong, kind of thing? So we look at each other, like whisper the 1, 2, 3, we'll draw, 1, 2, 3, we'll stand up, kind of thing. Just do everything simultaneously. We both draw, we both kneel up, and just sure as can be, the bucks are instantly onto it, even though we thought we were the most stealthy things out there. But they start bailing, like kind of nervously, not full out running yet, but down this pretty steep embankment. And we just kind of like out of the corner of our eyes made eye contact to each other. It's like, okay, now. So we both let him go. And I crank my deer, and he airmails it like right between the rack. Like, you could tell it was buck fever, like just staring at this thing. Like, it was probably a 190-inch deer.
Wow.
But yeah, it was just amazing how it was kind of, we were certain it was in the bag. Like, how can you miss at 18 yards on two unsuspecting deer? And even in mine, like, I picked a spot, or so I thought. He did the same. And you could totally tell where both of our minds were staring at these antlers, because I ended up actually hitting it right in the back of the head, right where the spine meets the skull. Like, it dummied it, thankfully. Like, I won't even try to pad up the story as like a perfect heart shot, and it ran 20 yards, kind of is what it is, but yeah, I would never, for all the money in the world, do a 1, 2, 3, both shoot at once again. Like, I've seen them go south with bows, with guns, with everything. Like, it's just an...
never goes right.
No, and there's just like that weird kind of added element of pressure to like shoot at the same time or make sure it's going to work together. It's like, you can't just focus on the actual task at hand, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So that was definitely one thing I learned. Well, two things. Don't look at the antlers, and then, yeah, never shoot. The old 1, 2, 3 shoot together trick. But
my hunting partner and I try to do that this year. You know, again, super close shot. We were in on javelina, so, you know, if there was ever an animal that was designed to do the 1, 2, 3 thing, it's the javelina.
Yeah, totally.
And we were, I would think I was at 16 yards and he was right at 20, and his was bedded and mine was up on its feet feeding. So in my head, I'm like, if I shoot first, the other one's going to jump up and then he's going to shoot, you know?
Yeah.
But like, faster than I can say that, basically.
Oh, totally.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Well, it didn't work out. I got mine. He did not get his.
That's how it always goes.
Yeah. So it was pretty shitty, unfortunately, because I've killed a bunch, and would have been his first, you know. And I was like, why did I, you know, like,
yeah,
I could have totally let him shoot it, and we could have found some other ones, and I could have hunted them. And
yeah, did he end up getting his first javelina on that trip? Or no?
Yeah, he did. Very next day, but it was just awesome. You know, it was just one of those things, like, you know, you try to get greedy, and that's what it is, really. I mean, if you think,
oh, entirely.
It just doesn't ever pan out.
Yeah, definitely. They always have a different plan in mind.
I think about the only time the 1-2-3 works is if you're wing shooting. You know?
Exactly.
And
then even if it doesn't, there'll be another bird 5 minutes later.
Right, exactly. Exactly. Yeah. So I know you've done quite a bit of sheep hunting and pretty much everything because of where you live. So if you got any other interesting stories, I'd love to hear it.
Yeah. Absolutely. Got an interesting one on my first bighorn sheep. So we had hiked into this area. It was kind of like a horseshoe of protected parks. It'd be like the equivalent of like Yellowstone and the Tetons and whatever, wrapped all around mile wide pocket of huntable land.
Okay.
So what happens is in the rut or the pre-rut, because we were hunting right at the end of October, the rams start to cruise between the parks across this huntable location. But unfortunately, with all that park pressure, it's also like the equivalent of the Tetons or Yellowstone for hikers.
Uh-huh.
So there's people with bear bells and yelling and talking and screaming, hiking through this hunting spot at all times of the day.
Okay.
So we get up there. My friend had a ewe tag, I had a ram tag, and just kind of hoping for the best of it because the season closed at the end of October, and I think there's only a couple days left at this point. And just kind of defeated, like seeing everything but what we want to, everything from people, bears, predators, just not a good sign. And at about, I don't know, 3 PM, hear these bells and hikers just loud joking coming up the trail behind us. It's like, ah, great, like this is pretty much writing off the rest of our hunting day. So they stop, have a quick BS session with us, and it's like, surprisingly, they weren't kind of anti, which is what you always expect when you're around those areas and groups of people. So
right,
wished us the best of luck, and they kept trucking like right where we're glassing. So just absolutely defeated for the day. And this is like, it would have been minus, I don't know, 5 or 10 Fahrenheit. Like, it was a miserable long day, so didn't need to add any more insult to injury for sure. Jeez. But they pop over the ridge. And then like half an hour later, we see this legal ram blow out, like kind of, you can see it's working away from them. Mm-hmm. So it's like, awesome. Like everything just immediately changed for the better. And then we see them and they're just kind of like dogging behind this sheep, pushing it over the hump, over the ridge. And then they peel off right. The ram peels off to the left. And he was in this little crevice that was maybe 50-100 yards wide and he did not come out. Okay, this is on. Like, this is going to happen. Same thing, kind of. How could this go wrong? So we sneak over there. Oh, my buddy actually had a ram tag too, now that I think about it. And he was bow hunting.
Okay.
So we were going to try to get him the ram with the bow, if we could. I had a rifle, in case this thing gets up and runs away kind of thing. So we ended up sneaking into, I don't even know, 20 yards of this thing bedded when we crested the hill.
Oh, wow.
Bedded facing us. So it's like, awesome. Like, I'm behind my buddy. I'm like, I'm about to watch a ram get arrowed. Like, this will be the coolest thing ever. And he range finds it. And this would have been, I don't know, early 2000s. So the range finders weren't that amazing yet. And he just wasn't trusting it. He's like, there's no way, because there's a bit of a, I don't know, indent in the landscape between us. So it kind of messed up his depth perception.
Right.
And he just wasn't believing it. Like, pick up the bow, pick up the rangefinder. He's like, there's no way. And then he set down the rangefinder, was finally getting ready to shoot, and the ram blows out. It's like, oh, no. Like, so he bails over the hill behind him, like right out of sight. So I just grab the gun and like run for this ridge to try to catch him going away. And luckily, he stopped just under 200 yards. So it was
kind of an easy shot.
Yeah, the end of his days in that moment. But it was just one of those things, like, it's hard to trust technology sometimes. Like, it would have been, if he would have trusted the rangefinder the first time, he would have had a broadside 20-yard shot on a bedded ram. Like, no-brainer. But it's like, sometimes it's just, I don't know, impossible to rely solely on technology, but it can be very detrimental if you don't. Like, that's why you bring those tools, is to utilize them and trust them. And it ultimately ended up costing a ram, right? So,
yeah. I had a very similar, I've had that experience more than a few times, but the one that sticks out to me, actually I have two that stick out really, really predominantly, was I was hunting in Wyoming, and the landscape was basically like sage with these big, like, I don't really want to call them box canyons, but these big, like, almost like box canyon cuts that would, you know, transect the landscape.
Yeah.
And, you know, you'd see these deer, they would drop down into these, you know, to these canyons, and they would bed right underneath the cliff edge of the walls of the canyon. And it was like straight down, you know, like rappelling gear type shit to get down to it.
Yeah.
So, you know, we would work our way along the top, and then we'd come right above them and just kind of ease up and peek our eyes over the edge, and, oh, okay, there's the buck, and get a range, and you're looking at this buck, and you're just in disbelief, right? Because it's such a small target, but it's telling you it's only 20 yards, you know, because of that's how crazy the angle was.
Yeah.
And I had just got these, I was testing out, Bushnell had just came out with their binocular, it wasn't their first set, it was their first like real angle compensation, like 1200 yard. I mean, it was 10 years ago. It was probably one of the best of the best, but, and I gave me those, and I was ranging this thing. I was getting one range with my normal, you know, handheld, and then I was getting a different range with these, and I was like, I couldn't process. And then I started doing the math too. I was doing the math on my phone, you know, doing the cut chart and everything, and trying to do it the old school way.
Yeah.
And all three of them were giving me different numbers, and I was just like, what the, you know, what do I do? What do I do? I want to shoot this freaking thing. He has no clue I'm there. Basically, I think the line of sight was like 80 yards, and what he ended up being at was like 23.
Yeah.
So, if you can get an idea.
And, yeah, a little bit steep.
Well, I went with, I think it was like 40 yards or something like that, or 35 or something. I ended up shooting right over him. You know, blew up my arrow. He jumps up and he runs away.
Yeah.
And I didn't end up getting that deer. Mm-hmm. But I was faced with that same situation like two or three more times. And I realized that, like you said, you know, you go into the woods with this technology, use it, you know? So I went with the newest, greatest thing, and I was able to score a deer on that trip. But it was crazy to me. Like, my mind was telling me there's no freaking way. Like,
yeah. I actually had something kind of similar, kind of different on my first Sitka blacktail deer ever. I was bow hunting on an island off the coast of BC, just south of Prince of Wales.
Okay.
And it's kind of like how Texas deer is smaller than like a big Saskatchewan whitetail. Like, further south you go in a home range, things are smaller. And that's the case for the Sitkas. Like, the ones in Alaska were way bigger body size than this population I was hunting. So I see this buck, I sneak in. It's, at first I think it's like 40 yards. I'm like, okay, this is in the bank. Like, been practicing all year. Like, should be no problem. It's oblivious to my location. So I draw, anchor, take all the time in the world, like, back tension release goes off, everything's good. And I sail this thing like a foot and a half over its back. I'm just like, what the heck? Like, couldn't figure it out. And I didn't use my rangefinder. Like, I'm usually pretty good out to, say, 50 yards for judging distance. To where, like, I don't know, I sometimes use it, sometimes don't, kind of thing. But I was just so accustomed to looking at mule deer and whitetail across the rest of North America, and I'd never seen a deer this small. It was just so small, but my brain clued in that it was small because it was that far away.
Right.
I ended up pacing this thing off and it was 17 yards.
Oh, shit.
I was just like mind blown. But yeah, the rest of the trip, the rangefinder came out and I don't think I missed a buck after that. But
I used to be such a snob, like back in when I first started bow hunting, I was like, rangefinders are cheating. Like, you know, like,
oh, totally. Yeah.
Now I won't even think about not ranging. Because think about how many deer get wounded because people guess wrong ranges, and you know,
yeah,
that's the number one reason for missing is not knowing the exact range of an animal. So,
100%. And it's weird. There always seems to be that thing as hunting evolves that people think is just cheating, like giving the upper edge. Like I remember when I switched from shooting fingers to a release that I felt I was cheating. Like it's just always that weird thing, but
yeah. I got over that real quick, but
yeah, totally.
So, yeah, the other time that I was thinking about it was that I had drawn my second Ibex tag here, well, not here, but in New Mexico, mm-hmm. and I just having an awesome time of passing up Billy's. I've stalked into a bunch, so now we're kind of getting close to the end of the hunt, and I haven't arrowed one yet.
Yeah.
So the whole me trying to get a better one than my first. Went out the door, right? And we glass up this Billy. Actually, it was a group of Billies, and the one that I'm going after, he's standing up on this rock by himself, and it's getting dark now. And I get up, come over the top, and the wind is just blasting me in the face. And it's another one of these scenarios where the hold is like 35, and the line of sight's like 90 yards, you know?
Yeah.
But the wind is just hammering me like 25, 30 miles an hour into my face. And I'm not thinking about the wind, you know, right now. I'm like, cause, oh, it's only 35 yards, but I'm not thinking that arrow really needs to travel 90 yards.
Yeah.
You know, through the air to get to that 35. And, anyway, so I draw back, I anchor, feel great about it. The shot breaks and boom, that arrow hits like right behind his front feet. Hits the rock and sparks go flying. So that Billy jumps off and he runs down and I'm like, son of a bitch. Well,
yeah,
they don't know what's going on. It's so windy and that arrow really didn't make that much of a noise. Mm-hmm. Another Billy jumps up on the same rock.
No way.
Same rock.
That's awesome.
So I draw back. I'm like, okay, I already know the yardage, 35. Do it again. Mm-hmm. Shoot. Same result.
No way.
And I'm like, what the fuck? There's no way I'm missing this. There's no, and I know left to right's perfect because it's literally hitting the same spot, like just
where. Yeah.
And I'm like, well, you know, I'm like, I don't know what's going on. A third Billy jumps up on the rock.
Oh.
I load another arrow and then it dawns on me, right? And I'm like, the freaking wind. That arrow is basically going perpendicular to the wind the whole way. So the wind is pushing it down towards the mountain.
Yeah.
Right. So it's not, I need to shoot for like 45 yards.
Yeah.
And I just get anchored. I'm about to squeeze off the 45 yards and that Billy jumped off on his own. And I never got another shot, but
no.
Yeah. It's crazy. Like, you know, when you're in the moment, you know, that's the opposite of that was me trusting the, you know, technology too much. Like,
yeah,
and blaming myself, but it really wasn't. It was like, I didn't take into account the other factors that were going on. And the other factor was, you know, that wind was so forceful that it was basically, you know, pushing my arrow down.
Yeah. It's amazing how much it can affect arrow flight for sure.
Yeah. If you have another quick one with us or for us, I'd love to hear it.
Yeah, sure. Let's go with a bear one. So I moved to BC about, I don't know, 7 years ago. And one of the first hunts I could do as a resident was spring bear there. And the bear numbers here are exceptional. Like, yeah, it's nothing to go see 30, 40 bears in a night kind of thing.
Wow.
Like, I was taken down.
Glassing for them, you mean?
Yeah, just spot and stalk purely. We're not allowed to bait here. So it's all, sweet. Unless you're running hounds, it's all spot and stalk.
Sounds like fun.
Yeah. So there's this kind of cleared pipeline. Like oil pipeline just north of where I live that's 70 yards wide. And it's always the first thing to green up. It gets the most sunlight. and I'm just hiking this thing, and I see a good bear, like Pope and Young bear. So I decide I'm going to sneak into this thing, and I get to, I don't know, 60 yards. Everything's perfect. Wind's right in my face. Like, this is going to be awesome. And I don't know, I've hunted and shot enough bears. Like, I'm pretty bold with them. Like, unless they smell you, they could see and hear you, and you'll probably still get away with getting closer. And the wind was perfect, so I'm okay. Like, just set in my mind that I'm going to get to 20 yards before I shoot. Like, make it nice and easy. He's busy feeding right out of the den, so one thing on his mind. And I closed like five more yards, and the wind does a 180. And instantly, like, I had an arrow kind of knocked as I was crawling across the ground, but his head comes up, he starts sniffing, and then he starts coming. And as fast as I could draw back and punch the trigger as hard as I've ever punched it in my life, I buried that arrow into the bear's chest, and I hit him at like 9 yards as he was coming full swing. And he spun and kind of veered off 45 degrees, thankfully. He probably passed within 4 yards of me before he hit the bush behind me. And it was just complete luck that this thing didn't completely just destroy me, run me down. But adrenaline was through the roof, obviously. And I actually got my arrow back. Like, it went lengthways through this thing. I was shooting like an 80-pound bow at the time with like a 500-grain arrow. So a lot of kinetic energy and momentum there. But I was convinced this thing was dead. Like, pushing a 2-inch expandable on a frontal shot, like, it went through a lot of organs and
yeah,
all of that. So I kind of rushed the follow-up. Like, I gave it maybe 15, 20 minutes. And I was hunting by myself. I wouldn't probably even have given it that, in all honesty, normally. But I wait 20 minutes and go in. And I ended up about 100 yards into the bush, bumping this thing live as can be.
Oh, shit.
And it ended up going probably 3 miles after having an arrow run lengthways through it. And it was like the most, I guess, unexpected result ever. Like, I've taken those shots on deer or similar animals. Like, I've frontal shot countless bears, and it's usually a 20 yard follow up and you're right. Done kind of thing.
Right.
But for whatever reason, it was just, I don't know if his adrenaline was still high from the whole thing or what.
That's nuts. But
yeah, I had never seen an animal go that far.
I've
really from any arrow shot.
Yeah, but usually if a frontal shot is not successful, it's because you get shitty penetration. But you know, if you transected them, you know, it's kind of like, yeah, like you hit everything. Like, you know.
Oh, yeah. Like, once we actually found the bear, the exit hole was kind of just off of center, but through the meat of the back quarter. Like, it literally went through everything.
That's nuts. Yeah. It's nuts that he smelt you and turned to charge you as versus run away too.
Yeah. I find it, like, I don't know, I've probably shot 50 something bears by now, but it's about 1 in 5 seems to be aggressive. I don't know if that's just my luck of the draw or what, but
that's crazy.
Definitely had more than one run at me over the years.
I've never once had an encounter. I mean, I haven't had a shit ton of encounters with bears either, but
yeah,
usually hundreds and hundreds of yards away, they're running away. You know, I've never
had, yeah.
I
don't know if it's a difference in the pressure or what. Like, I'm sure lots of these bears I'm hunting up here don't even see a hunter here. Like, it's thick bush. A lot of guys are, well, pretty much all guys up here that bear hunt do it from their truck seat. So if you get more than 600 yards from the truck, like, pretty good odds they're not seeing another hunter all season to develop that fear.
Yeah. No, that'd be fun though, man. I've never done, well, I shouldn't say that. I do it here in Arizona, but spot and stalk, but there's not a high chance of success here because we don't have the bear numbers. We have pretty, okay, I mean, for being Arizona, that's pretty decent. And our bear have large noggins here, which is kind of cool. But I've called them in. I love doing that. That was probably one of my favorite bear hunts I ever did, was that when I was like, I'm calling them in. That's the way we're doing it. Yeah. With the whole
was that team. With electronic or a hand call?
With a Fox Pro. Yeah.
Oh, nice. Yeah. So, jealous of that one. We're not allowed to use them on bears up here, but I would love to.
Yeah, that'd be awesome. Yeah, yeah. I don't know if I want to do a hand call because that just brings them right to you. That's, you know, for sure you're going to have a frontal shot. And,
yeah,
you know, chances of you getting drawn without getting busted is slim to none.
Yeah, absolutely. So,
but no, that's cool. I'd love to do that.
Yeah, it's definitely, I don't know, it's one of my favorite hunts of the year. Like, I usually shoot 2 to 4 a year kind of thing. It's just a good way to break up the spring. Like, we don't have the turkey numbers like the lower 48 does. So,
yeah,
I turkey hunt for 3 or 4 days. But other than that, it's just bears for 3 months every spring.
Yeah, bears are more fun anyway.
Yeah, I definitely agree there.
How many are you guys allowed to shoot?
2 in BC. And then I usually go to Alberta too and get another 2 there.
Cool.
But yeah, they're looking at raising those numbers from what I've heard around home, as high as 5. So,
bear population.
Kind of hoping that goes through.
Yeah. I haven't been up there in a long time. I think the last time I was up in Alberta, actually. I haven't been to BC in, I don't even know, 20 years probably.
Yeah.
But I went, Caroline was the name of the town.
I'm well aware of it.
Okay. Yeah. That's the last time I was there. I went there to, I had a moose tag, I had a whitetail tag, and I had a mule deer tag. And I did not, I did not fill any of them.
Oh, no way.
Yeah, it was, outfitter I was with was, you know, he was highly recommended or whatever, but I don't know. I felt like he didn't do, he was blaming it on me, you know, said, oh, I just wanted to hop stands around too much. But, you know, you set 15 hours in one stand all damn day and you don't see anything.
Yeah, I'd be moving too.
Come on, you know. But yeah. Yeah, it was just, it was weird, and it's crazy because I haven't been back up since. I had made a friend up there, and he invited me down. He's like, oh yeah, you know, I can, because I live here, I could take you,
yeah,
you know, for deer or whatever. And I'm like, oh yeah, man, I want to go. I definitely want to put together an Alberta mule deer hunt. Like, that's, it's on my bucket list to do something, especially since I didn't even get to see. Well, I shouldn't say. I glassed up an okay mule deer, you know, nothing that you'd get excited about in Alberta, you know, 145 maybe.
Yeah.
And then I had one moose that was maybe had palms the size of my hand.
Oh, yeah.
Like, you
definitely
know.
Definitely a little guy.
Yeah. And I shot at a wolf.
Yeah.
There was a 75-yard shot out of my tree stand, and I gave him a haircut.
Oh, too bad.
Yeah, it was crazy because here comes this white-tailed deer, and he's panting and running like a SOB, and he goes through, and then about like 10 seconds later, I'm like, oh, dude, there's wolves coming. There's like 2 or 3 wolves chasing this deer. Huh. And I gave him a haircut because I kind of pre-ranged some stuff, and I just guessed wrong. I was about 5 yards off.
Yeah.
And I stopped him and I you know, squeezed it off, and I just gave him a hair. He was cool too, because he was like almost white. He would have been a really cool rug or something, you know?
Yeah. That's awesome.
But I think I might have saved that deer's life after that.
That's good, at least.
I think they gave up. So.
Yeah. We definitely have too many predators up here.
Yeah. So my buddy that was up there, he's like, oh yeah. I'm like, oh, I can bring the Fox Pro. We'll come up here and we'll clean up. He's like, you can't use it even for, well, at least at the time, you couldn't use it for predators either. I'm like, what?
Yeah.
Snow geese. That was it. I was like,
yeah.
Well, that's pretty stupid.
Yeah, totally.
I don't see the whole, you know, what you're trying to accomplish here. Cause you know,
yeah. Oh, it's weird. Like, even here, you're allowed to use a Fox Pro for coyotes, wolves, cougars, lynx, bobcat, like every predator under the sun except a black bear.
Yeah.
It's like, why them? But
yeah, I guess over there in Alberta, you couldn't use it for anything but coyotes and snow geese.
Yeah. Even still, Alberta's pretty locked down for that. But
yeah, that's weird.
Yeah.
That's what definitely. I never understood those type of laws.
Yeah.
You know. Anyway,
yeah, it's usually not rationally based.
Well, one of these days I'll get back up there. I hope to do it soon, actually, because it's just, the older I get, the less I want to travel. You know, I'm getting to the point where the hunting part doesn't bother me. I don't mind the hiking all over the place and getting up early. None of that shit really bothers me. It's just dealing with getting to and from places, getting on planes and all that. Like, I just,
yeah, absolutely.
I loathe that.
It's definitely not getting any easier now too. So,
oh yeah, for sure. Especially now with the coronavirus and all that shit. Forget about it. It's like, you know. Yeah,
definitely. But I'd make it up to Alberta if you get a chance. Like, one of the best places to hunt mule deer, in my opinion. I don't know. Probably been to a dozen states and 4 provinces chasing them, and it's high up on the list.
Awesome. Well, cool, man. I want to thank you for coming on and sharing some of your stories with us.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It's good to catch up.
And now, from now on, I'll call you my buddy. Now I know. I feel like I know you a little bit.
Yeah, sounds good.
All right, man. Well, thanks a lot, and we'll talk to you soon.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that's it for this episode. Thanks for tuning in. Be sure to check out daysinthewild.com and be sure to give us a review on iTunes. Thank you, and we'll check you out on the next episode.